Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more and find the store nearest to you. Today's program was brought to you by 100 Bogart Street, the brand new co-working space in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Learn more at 100bogart.com.
My name is Hannah Forden. I'm the membership coordinator at Heritage Radio Network, but even before I joined the team, I loved listening to HRN during my subway commute. It made the time go quickly and left me feeling inspired for the day ahead. HRN listeners tune in from all over the world, but there are a few traits that we all have in common, no matter where we listen from: a curious palate, the fierceness to make a difference, and a hunger for lifelong learning about the culinary world. As you know, Heritage Radio Network is a listener-supported nonprofit. To deliver the most ambitious, entertaining, and of-the-moment stories in 2018, we need your help. We need to raise $150,000 by December 31st to accomplish these goals and to keep your favorite shows on the air. Together, we can make this HRN's most exciting, impactful, and delicious year yet. Become a member by donating today. Join us at heritageradionetwork.org/donate, and you'll immediately start enjoying benefits such as VIP invitations to HRN events, where you will mix and mingle with your favorite hosts. Memberships also make a perfect holiday gift for all the foodies in your life. This year, why not give the gift of food radio? You'll hear your generosity in action for the year to come. Help keep our lights on and our mics hot by pledging your support today at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We're coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It's Wednesday, December 6th, 2017. This is the 162nd episode of the series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is the editor-in-chief at a major glossy food magazine, and I will introduce her fully in a moment. First, as I do on every show, we will start out with my PR tip. And then later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to embrace print. Yes, we've all heard people say print is dead, and it's all about the internet now. But let's not really believe that. Print is not going anywhere. A physical newspaper or magazine brings joy and value to many, and to PR clients, hard copy press placements can be keepers. So, as we continue to become more and more attached to our smartphones and computers, let's not take for granted the beauty of paper. There will always be value in a publication that you can hold and cherish. That's my tip today. Now, I'm super excited to have my guest in the studio with me. It is Miley Carpenter. She is the founding editor-in-chief of Food Network Magazine, a joint venture between Hearst Magazines and Food Network. The magazine launched in 2008 and quickly became the best-selling food title on newsstands. Prior to joining Hearst, Miley was the executive editor of Every Day with Rachel Ray, and I met her many years ago when she was at Time Out New York. She is has a journalism degree from the UNC Chapel Hill and a culinary degree from FCI in New York. She's a two-time James Beard Award nominee and won a Beard Award for magazine feature writing. And she lives in Manhattan with her husband, Chef Wiley Dufresne, who listeners may certainly know, and her two daughters. So thank you for coming on the show. Welcome, Miley.
Thanks for having me. And thanks for being a print lover. You could not have said anything better to start the show.
Oh, awesome. You know, I do these tips every week and I'm like, I don't think I've done that one. How could I have not done that one?
It's close to my heart.
Yeah, it's fitting too. So I'm glad. I'm glad. And I believe it, you know?
Oh, I do too. I mean, we talk about this all the time at the magazine. And, you know, I go out with our publisher to talk to ad buyers. And I went to one of my mentors at Hearst and I said, you know, what should I say when people are saying, well, we're putting our money elsewhere or in digital? And he said, you know, you need to remind people that you can get information online, but magazines are about inspiration. So, you know, if you go searching for whatever, something, you know, some sort of basic cooking information, of course you can find it online. But if you want to sort of sit back and get inspired about what you want to make, you fall into a magazine. And I thought that was such a simple way to put it.
Yeah, no, I think that is a simple way to put it and makes sense. So you studied journalism. Did you always know you wanted to be a writer and work in publishing?
I always knew the writing part. I started a little school newspaper in second grade. So that part was, that part I knew. The food part came later. And then I went to it was then called French Culinary. Now it's
right,
the
ICC.
Center.
Yeah.
And when I started there, that was kind of a deciding point where I was like, well, am I going to go into food or am I going to stay in writing and just focus on food? And it took me like one night in the kitchen to know that there was no way I could handle being in a restaurant. But I loved the industry. So that's how it all happened.
Yeah. But a little with your background with before after college, did you move back to here, New York?
I went to journalism school in North Carolina, yeah. And I was just straight up journalist, newspaper writer. So I was kind of on that track where it's sort of like the military. They keep moving you to different papers, and you go to bigger and bigger papers. So I was based at the Raleigh News and Observer, and someone came down from New York recruiting for Time Inc. And I went up there, and then when I realized I could go to culinary school at night, it all
made sense.
Yeah,
and as I said in my whatever version of bio for you, I mean, I think back of that's how I met you at Time Out New York, and you were there for how long? A couple years?
Yeah, like 3 years, yeah.
And what was that like? I mean, it's a weekly publication, and it was, as a publicist who works mostly with restaurants, I mean, Time Out New York has always been, you know, a major publication for food news in the city.
When you remember those days, it was so different back then. It mm-hmm. feels, I mean, now this is going to make me sound old, because when I was working, but we're young at heart. When I was working there, you remember this, we weren't fighting for any online cover. It was all about just who would who would come out with the new restaurants each week. So we would wait for, when we were fought with New York Magazine mm-hmm. at the time, it was Time Out in New York. And, you know, we would talk to you guys about what was coming up and kind of hope that we got the first scoop. But it was an exciting time.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And so after that, you went to Every Day with Rachel Ray?
That's right. Yes.
Okay.
That was an exciting time in print magazines. And it was a project that sort of perfectly led to launching Food Network magazine, because it was, you know, taking someone who really had a presence in the food world and translating a person. I mean, it was different to translate a brand into print,
right.
But take a person and kind of put them, you know, translate that voice into print was what we had
yeah.
to do for her. And then it became, how do you translate a whole bunch of voices in one brand into print?
And because you're not just the editor-in-chief of Food Network magazine, you were the founding editor-in-chief. So what was the process like of putting together a magazine with an established TV?
Exactly. In a way, it's a gift, right? Because
channel.
You had this incredibly powerful brand. People knew it. It had been around for, I think it was 16 years when we launched, thereabouts. So when we were going out to focus groups to talk to them, they knew this brand so intimately. In fact, one woman in a focus group, she's like, oh yeah, I've bought that magazine. I've seen it many times. I was like, no, you haven't.
Doesn't exist.
We don't exist yet. But it was so familiar to them that they felt that they already had it. And so that makes it an easy launch in some ways and a very difficult one in others, because people had huge expectations. This brand was something they knew very well, and they had in their minds what it was going to be. But that was true for me too. I mean, honestly, when Hearst first called me, I was working at Rachel, and they said, you know, we're interested in a food magazine. Can you come talk to us? But they wouldn't tell me what it was. And
oh,
so
really?
I went through this interview, and I knew they were interested. And they said, you know, just go put some ideas together for us. And that's a hard thing to do when you don't know what the focus is. So they said, if there was going to be a new food magazine, what would it be like in your mind? And then they called later and they said, okay, you know, sign an NDA. This is a project we're thinking about with Food Network. The minute they said Food Network, I mean, I've been watching it for years. In fact, when I was a writer at the Raleigh News Observer, I begged to go come to New York and write a story about Food Network launching when the network first came to be, and kind of plea to get it to come to Raleigh. So I'm a longtime lover of the network, and it just, once they said those two words, I could kind of visualize what it would be.
Yeah. So, what was that visualization? How has, and then how has the magazine, has it changed over the years?
Yeah. I mean, I think at first, what was eye-opening for us is that, so I was coming from Rachel, and we were looking at this super crowded market of food magazines. I mean, Gourmet was still around, and, you know, everybody was on fire at the time. And so we were looking, in terms of Food Network, for this vertical space in the market. So we had kind of women's service magazines, and then you had these really aspirational food magazines like Gourmet. And we thought we'd fall somewhere in between. So we went out and talked to all these focus groups, and what we learned was that people weren't looking for that. They were saying the reason they liked Food Network, and this hadn't dawned on me as a fan, was that they got all these different voices, from very simple stuff up to like watching Iron Chef and watching really complicated cooking techniques. And that was, they were saying, you know, I don't cook in one way. I cook in all these different ways. And so magazines had sort of said, okay, we need to do food for a woman who needs a, you know, fit 20-minute meal on a weeknight. And then other magazines were doing these kind of elaborate stories. And they liked Food Network because it was all of that, and the same person who would need a 20-minute meal on Monday would go out and spend the entire day buying cheese and wine and producing a huge fancy feast and like would be willing to try a big cooking project. So they wanted kind of all of that in one place, and Food Network was doing that on air. So that gave us some direction for the magazine to kind of do this wider range of cooking than we thought we would do in the first place.
Yeah, so do you... Is the magazine only chefs that are on the Food Network?
No, I mean, definitely not. Okay. I mean, of course, on the cover and, you know, some of the bigger features. But we often do stories where we'll just do, you know, like the chef's 50 greatest Italian cooking tips. And we'll go to chefs in restaurants all over the country and ask them for their greatest tips. So no, it's not limited to
Food Network. So it
doesn't
have to be exclusive to...
I mean, I would say we keep it... to kind of friends of the network, if that
makes sense. Well, that makes sense. And I saw, I mean, from flipping through the magazine, there are different features on many of the Food Network chefs, even their tips on I don't know, there was something with the questions, like, you know, of readers' questions of on cooking, and then certain features. So how do you work with... Like, how do you plan an issue? Do you look at what's currently running on the network?
So one concern we had when we launched was the last thing we wanted to do was kind of flatten the network, right? It's very exciting to watch the network. You have all these chefs. It's super energetic. And so we intentionally did not take shows and turn them into columns, or even the chefs and give them columns, because we didn't want it to feel like we just, okay, let's just put the network in print. What we have to do more now, more than we ever have before, because of, you know, the way digital and social are working, and how many distractions there are now, is really like, it's really played at the strength of print. And so that's about big, beautiful images and letting people kind of fall into stories and doing less of these like really tidbitty sidebars that we used to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing more of that. And then in terms of the chefs, you know, like I said, we kind of try to do a mix of Food Network chefs and other chefs around the country. And then we mix up the content. So maybe you're used to seeing a chef cook on the air all the time. Well, we're going to take you and show you their house and how they decorated all the rooms in their house. They're not just the kitchen, but elsewhere too. So it's about seeing different parts of their lives too.
Yeah, no, it's the content. The content's great. And from, I you would know probably the stat better than me, but it is the most subscribed in the food category of magazines.
The crazy stat is it's the second best-selling magazine on newsstands, period, for all categories.
Wow.
So I mean,
that's
that speaks
incredible.
To the power of the brand, really, you know, and the fan base for Food Network. But it's even for all fashion books and all of that. So that's
incredible. No, congratulations. I mean, that's says a lot. And on that awesome note, we're going to take a break. So stay with us. This is Only Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Whole Foods Market believes in seeking out local, fresh, and seasonal food, and in supporting local farmers, makers, and the community as a whole, economically and agriculturally. Whole Foods Market believes in food that is vivid and colorful, fresh and full of nutrients. Food that connects you to your body, the seasons, and to nature. Food that helps you do more, sleep better, and wake up happier. Found in over 400 locations throughout the United States, Whole Foods Market only sells food that meets their standards, which means no artificial colors, flavors, preservatives, or sweeteners, ever. Whole Foods Market believes in real food. Visit WholeFoodsMarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Miley Carpenter. She's the editor-in-chief of Food Network Magazine. And you are also the editor-in-chief of New Pioneer Woman Magazine.
Yes.
You want to tell us about that? Because that's a new project.
It is. We are we put out two issues this year, and we are producing four more next year with Reed Drummond, who has, I mean, she is just a phenomenon. I don't know how familiar you are with Reed.
Well, she is the pioneer woman, right? That's like, that. I don't know if that was like how she started like an Instagram handle or what it was, but that I know her name through that.
She just came up through the blog world. And what's been so interesting about this is I think the part of her, well, I know a lot of her appeal is that she built this from the ground up. You know, she started a blog, she gained a huge following for it. That then led to a show on Food Network. She now has a super successful line of housewares at Walmart and hugely successful cookbooks. So this all kind of led to a magazine,
amazing.
But she is still like, she is truly authentic. And I think you can't say enough about that these days. I think, you know, people are looking for authenticity in the world of fake news and everything else to find something that's real that you can trust. And I mean, she is truly the real deal. We flew out there the first time to meet with her before we started working on the first issue. And she lives in Pawhuska, Oklahoma, on this unbelievable cattle ranch. I mean, you know, the acreage is just mind-blowing. And, you know, she said, do you want to go out with Lad in the morning? Lad is her cowboy husband. And so Lad took us out. You know, he showed up. I was like, he's dressed like a cowboy. And then I was like, no, he's actually
a cowboy.
he's really a cowboy. You know. And so we stayed in the truck, but he did his thing and rounded up the cattle. I mean, he's out there working every day, and she is taking care. They have four kids. But her story is such a, I'm sure a lot of people know this story, but she was living in L.A. and kind of headed to law school and stopped in Oklahoma to get everything in order and figure out what she was going to do. She was probably headed to Chicago and met Lad.
Oh, wow.
At a bar, and that was it. She then,
that's,
you know,
very
stayed
cool
with him, and he's, you know, I don't know how many generations back the Drummond Ranch goes, but she fell in love with him. They got married, have four kids, and then she became many years later the pioneer woman, and she's just out there, you know, doing it.
And now she has a magazine. That's like, yeah, that's like, it's very inspirational.
It is, and her fan base is so, they're so kind and so inspiring. I was watching what happened when we launched, and it was, you know, we had to go back to press. The issue sold out instantly, and we went back on press for the first issue. Then we produced even more for the second. But people were just like going crazy trying to get their hands on it because they're such huge fans of hers, and they wanted to find it. But then you could watch the all the comment fields, and it's like, oh, if you can't find one, I've got one at my local store, and I'll mail it to you. They're just really like lovely people.
Yeah, that's. And how many issues are you doing?
So we'll do four next year.
Okay.
We did two this year. And, you know, we keep flying out. It takes us a whole day to get there. I almost died from a rattlesnake.
Oh, my God.
on our cover. We were shooting the cover, and I was like, all of a sudden I turn around, and this little kid is, like, stabbing a snake with a piece of wood, and his sister, like, pulls out a switchblade to cut the rattle off. And I was like, wow, this is, we are in Oklahoma.
You're not in New York City anymore.
Like, I'm an idiot. I have, like, my Converse low tops on. I'm like, next time I'm wearing boots.
At least you weren't wearing heels, I guess. But so how do you manage all of this? Like, what's a day in the life? Or I'm sure every day is probably different, but
I think I just choose what to fail at each day. Oh, so I'm like, okay, today I'm like, my kids are going to have chicken nuggets for dinner. Hawaii and I are getting takeout. I mean, we eat a lot of takeout for two people who actually know how to cook. It's sort of, it's embarrassing.
That's research.
Yeah, there you go. We were ordering the meal. We started last year. We were ordering meal kits. Yeah,
really?
You can believe. Like, shouldn't we be able to cook dinner? So we were ordering meal kits, and then we were fighting over who had to actually just assemble the meal kit.
It's hysterical. So,
no, yeah, it's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah. So I guess a day in the life is always different.
Yes, that's a hard. Yes, that's a hard question.
Or, but yeah, with juggling, I don't know, juggling just the between the different magazines, between all the content, and like, what's your turnaround time? I mean, I remember back. I don't know. I mean, are you still, like, what issue are you working on now?
Well, for monthlies, I mean, we're planning spring issues right
okay.
now. So it is a little hard because we're in, you know, holidays are everywhere. But we did that this summer. We made all our turkeys
right.
and all our holiday cookies this summer. And now we're thinking about, you know, Easter. So I'm always a little off. And then when the real holiday comes around, I'm like, well, I already did this. I know I did this already. But so, yeah, I can't lie though. My job is, you know, I work a normal day. We're not staying till midnight or anything. We all have families. But yeah, it's a little crazy. I will say this though, that everyone's so passionate about Pioneer Woman. And it's so nice to work in print and see such excitement about a new product that people are that makes it easier.
Yeah.
Across the board.
Where is Pioneer Woman magazine available? Is it the same distribution as Food Network?
It's not quite as wide. It will keep getting wider. You can subscribe the pioneerwomanmagazine.com.
It has
all the information about subscribing, and then it was sold. The first issue was sold exclusively at Walmart, and then we went wider with the second. But on newsstands, on bookstore newsstands.
Okay. People can look for it. I need to look for it. Well, let me ask you. You touched on feeding your kids a bit. So, I do my tie-in question from question. So, I asked my guest on my last show. I had on Jonas Anderson. He's the beverage director at Meyers USA, which is a hospitality group founded by Danish culinary entrepreneur Klaus Meyer. So, I had asked him to ask you a question. So, his question is, how do you get your family or kids excited about eating different things?
Oh, this is the hardest thing. I've failed. I've failed at this in such a spectacular way. No, for real. You know, when we first had kids, I think in Wiley's mind, they were going to be the most extraordinary eaters, and they were going to try all these different. We had, she just left, but we had for a long time a Russian nanny, and for whatever reason, they would only eat the food she made. So nothing that Wiley or I made, they would just, not nothing. I mean, not lasagna, not tacos, no mac and cheese, nothing. They'd eat borscht and, you know, meatballs and anything that she created. She's gone now, so they literally
don't eat
like pizza and chicken nuggets. Yeah. But the conflict, and I think a lot of parents go through this, is that we both love food. We're both in the industry. I don't want food to be a point of stress in their life. And so I don't want to have a fight at the dinner table. I don't want it to seem like something I'm making them do. So I think that I'm willing to kind of let them eat these very plain foods until they're ready, just in the interest of keeping food a sort of happy experience.
Yeah. How old are your kids now?
8 and 5.
Okay. So. Are they aware that, I mean, do they know you and Wiley are such major players in the food world?
I don't know.
Power couple, I could call you.
I know where the power is in our house, and it's not in our hands. No, they know, you know, Wiley has a donut shop now, and
yes.
So
you know,
everything's dreamy for them because they just get to eat donuts.
Yeah,
all the time.
No, I would think the kids would support his venture there. Yeah.
We try to, you know, we take them out to eat. We want them to get used to eating in restaurants, but we have to go to places that will serve plain pasta.
Right. Well, kids, so what advice would you give to someone maybe that wants to get into food journalism?
And we just had a huge class of 40 students from Penn State in, and they were all looking like for this magical answer. How do I do this?
How do I become you?
I'll say a couple of things. One thing we noticed when we interview is how when we're going through resumes, and sometimes we'll have a stack of 50 resumes, the one thing we're looking for is that you're passionate about the field. I would sooner take someone who does not have a degree in journalism or in food if I could just see that they're super passionate about the topic. And you can see signs of it on a mm-hmm. resume, but we'll have people who go to great schools and come in with zero experience and no passion for what we're doing. That can make all the difference. Like I said, the reason we're kind of able to produce two magazines right now is because everyone really loves what they're doing. So, I mean, that's a super obvious answer, but I think it's easy when you're just coming out of school to talk yourself into jobs that aren't right for you. It's hard to walk out the door if there's a job opening that you might get. If you don't care about it, I feel like it's a hard decision to make, but maybe it's better to go into something you love.
I think that's great advice, and it's true. Yeah, being passionate about something and... what do they say then, like, if you do what you love, then you're never working a day of your life.
I mean, it really does feel like that's we've heard it before, but you can tell in the interview too, you cannot fake it. I can always tell when someone's not actually, when they really don't care. We once hired, I had a long conversation with HR because we had hired a woman who was a vegetarian. I was like, this might be hard for her. Like, we do these big stories where it'll be like, the best burger in every state, or barbecue. There's a lot. There's meat mm-hmm. in our magazine, and I thought it might be hard. And he's like, I think she'll be okay. We hired her. She really only lasted like 6 months because it just, it was a point of stress for her because a lot of it she couldn't.
What, vegetarian times? And
there are other places. Right?
No, well, yeah, it's a food magazine. I could see that being challenging, but. Actually, I wasn't sure where you were going to go with that a little bit. I thought maybe she overcame it
started eating bacon and came around.
No, or, but no, I could see it. I could see that challenging, but she got her 6 months of experience. All right. Well, we're going to take another break and then we're going to come back and we're going to play my speedrun game and talk a little industry news. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Bogart Street is finally open and ready for Bushwick. 100 Bogart is a brand new, state-of-the-art co-working space that provides turnkey workspaces, including open layout desks, meeting spaces, and furnished private offices. Members have access to top-notch amenities such as custom furniture, high-speed internet, spacious kitchenettes with coffee and tea, printers, scanners, and much more. Alongside their professional work environment, 100 Bogart also provides exclusive educational programming for any curious entrepreneur. Heritage Radio Network has made their new office home at 100 Bogart and will host many events there in the future. For more information about their co-working space, visit 100bogart.com and become a member to network, create, and educate.
And we're back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Miley Carpenter. It's time for my speed round game. What this is I name a couple things and you pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla. So, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, here we go. Eat in or eat out? I guess I should say or take out.
Eat out.
Wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
Cocktail.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
Tasting menu.
Small plates or large plates?
Small plates.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Tipping.
Chopped or beat Bobby Flay? That's not a fair one for me. You were going so fast and awesome. I don't want to screw you up.
Of course, Bobby Flay.
Oh, okay. Cool. This is the easiest one of them all. Dews or Dunkin's?
Oh, Dews.
Dews. That's Dews Donuts. Wiley's Donuts. They're fabulous. People should go get them. Okay. How about cheese plate or dessert?
Dessert.
Manhattan or Brooklyn?
Manhattan.
The game. You're awesome. You're so quick. A lot of people get stuck and want to have a whole long time conversation about everything. So, yeah. Yeah, no, everyone's different. It's fun. So, time for industry news. The article I picked out was on Bloomberg by Kate Crater, and it's entitled "Let There Be Light: New York Restaurants Emerge from Dark Dining Era." Around the city, restaurateurs have decided that the days of dim, romantic lighting are over, and not just because people want to be able to Instagram their meals. So, Kate gave a few arguments or points of as to why dining rooms have gotten lighter. I do think, personally, social media and the Instagram is a major part of it, because everyone is taking pictures of the food these days, and a dark restaurant, you can't get good photos. I actually have, social media influencers, if they're going into clients of mine, they're requesting to go in at lunchtime because they want the natural light. So, what's your take on this?
Well, I care more about my dining experience than my social media, than the social media end of it. Wiley and I fight about this all the time because I like dim lighting, and I'm always, the romance of a room like that. So we're at home. We're constantly, we just renovated, and every single light in the apartment is on a dimmer because we can't agree on how bright it should be.
That's a good, fair compromise, or that works.
That dimmer is constantly getting moved up and down. When he's in the kitchen, he likes it to be super bright, and he even wants the dining room to be brighter, and I'm always turning it down.
Yeah. I personally at home keep it pretty dim. I'm a more dim person, but I do like, I take pictures of my food, and it is challenging in a restaurant, but I like dim restaurants. I mean, I think one of the points Kate was saying in the story was about the Japanese influence and how they're all about transparency. And it's true, when you go to a sushi restaurant or in a Japanese restaurant, it is light and they can see the food, and it's still yet comfortable and can be cozy or romantic. I don't know.
Sometimes it just maybe depends on what you're eating. You're absolutely right. When you're eating sushi, I'm more willing to do that. But I don't want to be eating like a really cozy sort of comfort food on a cold winter night in a room that's like lit up like the 6 train, you know? And sometimes you go in and you're like, oh, you can definitely see my pimples right now. It's really bright in here.
Yeah.
So I would prefer that they all help us out with the lighting.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see if this is a trend, or it was the Edison light bulbs and the whole dark ambiance that took off 10 plus years ago, and especially in New York and cities, and everyone started copying that, and it's everywhere still. But I don't know if we're gonna see like super bright restaurants, but I do notice though dining out that sometimes I feel there are lights positioned specifically over tables for the fact that people are taking pictures of their food.
Yeah. I mean, this is a great story, and Kate's the perfect person to write it because she's eating out every night. So no one has a better sense of what's going on in the whole city than Kate. So I enjoyed this story.
I did too. She knows her stuff, and it's interesting to see how things are changing because of social media or whatever other influence. So
I'm terrible. I should probably post more of my food, but you're right. It doesn't, my photos never come out in any sense.
I sit down for a meal, and I try to be quick, but I have this habit now. I have to take a picture of everything.
I often forget. Okay. Well, I forget to take a picture of it, and sometimes I forget to share it with Wiley. So we're meant to share it, and then I'll just finish the appetizer before I get to try it. So I need to remember to stop but. I don't know how chefs feel. Sometimes I feel like they want us to just dig in and enjoy it without.
Well, how does he feel? I mean, does he take pictures of all
sometimes,
the food too?
Yeah, we're both saying if we can't get a good shot of it. And sometimes I just don't want to have my phone with me at all.
Right.
I want to have meal start to finish, just sort of enjoy it.
Yeah, well, that there was, I forget what restaurant, but there was something. Oh, I know. It was Marco Canora of Hearth. He was saying, he started something like he put a box on the table for people to put their phones in so they would feel like they could put it away for the meal and have a conversation with their friends. I don't know how that's working out.
Yeah,
but
we should check back in with him.
Yeah, that's going. It was recent. I don't know, maybe like a month or two ago. So yeah, we'll have to see. So. Okay, so that was industry news. We're going to take one more break and come back and do my solo dining experience, and we'll have the final question. So stick around. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience. This week, it's at Biggie's. Here's the rundown. The location, 3739 Clinton Street, New York City. The concept, a hearty sandwich shop on the Lower East Side. The chef and owner, Dewey Dufresne. Why did I go? Because It's Wiley Dufresne's dad, and he's making sandwiches. I mean, how could you not want to go? My experience. So over Thanksgiving weekend, I headed downtown, and I was warmly greeted when I entered. I asked some of the cooks behind the counter what I should get, their favorites, and basically they recited the entire menu to me. So I was left on my own to pick, and that was just fine. I ended up getting the Biggie Bird, which is a turducken on sliced marble rye bread. It has chicken liver pate, wilted red onion, smoked duck breast, warm turkey breast, melted Munster cheese, roast tomatoes, artichoke hearts, arugula, and mango mayonnaise. And this was over Thanksgiving weekend, so it was kind of fitting. And my take, it was delicious. It was an amazing combo. And the bread was super fresh. I asked where it was from, and they said Levain's. The ambiance, it's a low-key counter service shop with storefront windows and a handful of seats. I'd say it's perfect for sandwich cravings. Interesting tidbit. Wiley's dad first introduced his Biggie Beef sandwich at the Feast of San Gennaro in 2011. He secured a space in 2015 and had to deal with construction and some permitting delays. And then took 6 years, but he opened, and it's fantastic. So my personal fun fact is I stopped in. I wasn't planning to eat that much because I was going to take it to go, but I started eating the sandwich, and I ate way more than I intended to. It was delicious, and the woman behind the counter was so sweet. She packed it up for me, and the hospitality there was really great. I'm looking forward to going back. So the cost was $13.50. That's not including any tax or gratuity. Would I go back? As I said, yes. And their website is biggies.com, and that's spelled B-Y-G-G-Y-Z, which is really cool. And I think on my Instagram post, I put go Biggies or go home. That's my tagline for them. So, yeah. So Dewey, Wiley's dad, really amazing. Might not have picked up, or they should have, but your husband Wiley. So Dewey, have you had many of his sandwiches before he opened the shop?
Yeah, he's been a sandwich fan forever, and used to run a sandwich shop in Providence. So this goes back way, way back.
Way back. It's cool. Yeah, I think it was fun going. So it's, I think people should go down to the Lower East Side, check it out. Okay, so it's time for the final question. So my I had a little switcheroo with my guest for next week, and it's most likely going to be Jim Leahy, who is the head chef baker owner of Sullivan Street Bakery and co-restaurant in New York City. He also has a new wholesale Sullivan Street Bakery outlet in Miami, and he has a new book out, the Sullivan Street Bakery Cookbook. And yeah, I get people listening to my show, you'll have to stay tuned. I think it's going to be Jim next week, and if it's not next week, it will be another time. So, Miley, can you please ask a question for Jim?
Sure, Jim. excuse me. Let's pretend all of your restaurants and outlets are closed and you have to order a pizza. Who do you call?
Ah, tricky. Yeah, that's good. I will find out. So, thank you. That's the show. And I've just, you know, as I said earlier, like, we've known each other in the industry a long time, and I'm a big fan of yours. I'm impressed with your whole career, and I just appreciate you taking the time to come on my show, and I wish you much continued success.
I'm a fan as well. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And people need to go out and get your Food Network magazine. I'm looking at this happy baking cover. lots of holiday tips. So thank you.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So to recap, my guest today has been Miley Carpenter. She's the editor-in-chief of Food Network Magazine. Their website is foodnetwork.com/magazine. You can find her on Instagram at Miley_FNMag and on Twitter at Miley Carpenter and also at Food Network. You can find me on both Instagram and Twitter at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, and at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. My websites are BayerPublicRelations.com and SherryBayer.com. And all of our shows are archived at heritageradionetwork.org. We are also on iTunes and Stitcher. So thanks again to Miley. Thanks to Hearst, Executive Director of PR, Nathan Christopher. And to my show's engineer, Vitor. I'm Sherry Bayer. I'll be back next week at 4 p.m. with another live show. It may be Jim. It may be someone else. So please stay tuned. It's my last show of 2017. And I hope you'll tune in then. And thank you for being part of All in the Industry.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.